for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little, zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zoom into the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha, 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is the My Science Project episode for December 13th of 2007, and the show's going to get into a little bit of what happens when you try to make music out of DNA. It's the Musical Gene Show, and I have to give a lot of credit to Julia here for tipping me off on a good starting point to explore musical genes. From one website, I got into a whole heck of a lot of sounds coming from genes and DNA and protein, and we'll have a little look at that today. For those of you who are struggling with some last-minute Christmas gift ideas, I've got a handful of suggestions of gifts that you might give to the science geek in your life, a little bit of local events, and a bit of a roundup of some of the hot science that came out of UBC in this year. So that's what we're going to get on to shortly. But before I do, I want to play a great tune from a Montreal ska band called Stepper. This song is Down to Business. That was Stepper singing Down to Business. They're a great ska band out of Montreal. And we're going to get down to business right here in the station studio. You're listening to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM. And today's show is going to take a big, long look at musical genes. But one point of business that you might want to take note of for later on in the show is our email address and telephone number here. So later on in the show, we're going to do a little bit of a giveaway where you have an opportunity to win a couple of double passes to the movie nights at Science World. And you can do that a little later on, and we'll tell you how. But what you'll need to know at that time is our email address. And so if you want to get in touch, it's myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. And if at that moment you're compelled to call us, you'll want to have 604-822-2487 at your fingertips. So our email address is myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. And our phone number is 604-UBC-CITR. That's 604-822-2487. So coming up in later on the show, you'll need that information for one of our giveaways. But what I was saying earlier is that the show is going to be all about genes to music. And this is kind of a neat story that just is a bit trivial, but it kind of produces a lot of interesting sounds, and you're going to get a chance to hear a lot of those today. So Rie Takahashi is a graduate student in molecular genetics who has studied the piano since she was a child. And she's recently developed a method for converting genetic sequences to audio sounds as part of an undergraduate project for her supervisor, Jeffrey Miller. She says they were inspired in part by a blind meteorology graduate student at Cornell University in New York who developed a way of reading weather maps by converting different color gradations of a map into a range of tones. So in other words, Takahashi wanted to create a way for people to engage and learn about proteins and genes without actually using their eyes, and in this case, by using their ears. So a little bit of background in biology might be required to really get into this sound experiment. And here are the basics. So our genetic code, or our DNA, is made up of a sequence of just four different components, and those components are called nucleotides. It is the unique sequence of these building blocks that codes for the proteins that make up our body. So DNA provides the code for protein. Even though there are only four different components in DNA, proteins can be made up of a unique sequence of amino acids, and there's many more than four. So the jump in complexity from four single building blocks of DNA to as many as 20 different building blocks of protein is possible because the DNA code is not read one nucleotide at a time. It's actually read in a combinations of three at a time. So instead of coding for just four independent things, the four possible building blocks of DNA, when read three at a time, can code for up to 64 different things. So in other words, there's four possibilities in the first position, four in the second, and four in the third, giving a total possible outcomes of 64. As I mentioned just a moment ago, there's actually 20 amino acids, so the full complexity of 64 is not necessary. But it is the sequence of these 20 amino acids in proteins that prescribe the music made by Takahashi and her supervisor, Miller. A simple song has been constructed, actually by another group in this case, based on the way that three nucleotides of DNA encode a single amino acid. In this piece, you can hear trios made from the letters A, C, T, G actually being chanted in the song, followed by a strong beat and accompanying letter that represents the encoded amino acid itself. This piece is called Code Table, and I'm going to let you have a listen to that and just digest the concept of DNA encoding protein. Thank you. What you've just been listening to is Code Table, rather a very literal interpretation of the DNA code and how it can encode different amino acids. And if you really got into listening to that, you could probably hear the ascribed letters to the building blocks of DNA, A, C, T, G, being read out in groups of three. And those are the groups of three that encode amino acids. So one way to actually make music from a protein sequence would be a direct one-to-one composition system, where one amino acid corresponds to one note. So in this case, music would be made up of a total of 20 notes, which could possibly span up to 2.5 octaves. So Takahashi and Miller did a small experiment with a protein called Thi-A, and this protein was encoded in the one-to-one composition system. And you'll see that it's actually quite a simple outcome. So have a listen to the single note interpretation of the protein Thi-A. Was a one-to-one composition system for Thi-A, and as you could hear, the results of this coding strategy or musical translation strategy, where one amino acid corresponds to a single note within a 2.5 octave range, is actually quite simple, and it lacks a lot of musicality, it lacks very much depth. What it does give you a sense of is the variety of amino acids that make up this protein. So to expand on the complexity and the musical output of their translation systems, Miller and Takahashi created music of three-note chords by building thirds off of the original single note. And this creates sort of a fuller sound, as you'll hear in just a minute. But music has a lot more than just sounds to it, and rhythm is something that you might want to include. And to create rhythm, they looked at codon distribution. Now, codon is a trio of nucleotides encoding a single amino acid. So most codons will appear numerous times in a single gene. And so what they did was counted the frequency of a codon within a gene and assigned a note duration based on the frequency. And in this way, rhythm was created. So what you'll hear now is Thi-A, the same gene as you just heard in the one-to-one assignment, but in a more complex coding approach. And you'll see that it's much more complex and interesting tune.
Thank you.
rather an abrupt end, perhaps, but certainly a more interesting tune than the one-to-one assignment for the thigh A protein. So they added a few other layers of complexity to the music by looking at the hydrophobicity of the amino acid. So that's their tendency towards water. So more water-loving or hydrophilic amino acids have been assigned a chord in a higher key, while water-hating or hydrophobic ones are in a lower key. So similar amino acids actually sound alike, where they're similar in terms of their hydrophobicity. And the duration for which a chord is played is determined by the prevalence of its codon, as I just mentioned, the frequency of a codon within the protein. So amino acids that make up a good chunk of a protein will be played for longer than those that are rare within the protein. And this is where rhythm can come from. In fact, Takashi and Miller offer a free online service where you can enter a string of DNA sequence or protein sequence, or even randomly, and immediately you'll hear the result. And you can find that at their website by searching Gene 2 Music, where 2 is the actual number. You can even add a button to PubMed, which is a site for searching online databases of DNA and protein sequences that will allow you to immediately play your gene while you're doing your search, which is it's quite the novelty and perhaps is something that should be included a little more often in scientific presentations. And finally, Takahashi also says that listening to the proteins is helpful for developing an intuitive sense of some of the patterns that lie within genetic sequences. She says, when you listen to them numerous times, you start to hear a melody or a main theme arising from them. So here's another one for your listening pleasure. This is hemoglobin alpha from the horse. Okay, so that was hemoglobin alpha taken from the horse, converted using Takahashi and Miller's genes to music system. Now, the approach used by Takahashi and Miller is unique in its own right, but they're certainly not the first to create music from DNA or music from protein sequences. There are a number of other groups who have similarly used various features of the genetic or protein code to compose music. And the results are highly varied, obviously, depending on their sort of algorithm for designing the music. Another composer, genetic composer we could call them, is Larry Lang, who composed a piece called Oxyfugue, starting with the sequence for oxytocin. And this is the hormone which induces labor, as his wife happened to be pregnant while he wrote it. It only includes 27 bases, or 9 amino acids, that form oxytocin. And so these are mapped to a repeating piano figure. But in order to turn this into more of a fugue, the full oxytocin gene becomes the baseline, and SNPs of RNA inversions, transposition, and gonadotropin pizzicato fill in the rest. Here is Larry Lang's Oxyfugue 9. You've just been listening to Larry Lang's Oxyfugue 9, which is one of many possible pieces that have been created using genetic and protein code as its starting point. And you might be wondering if the translation process can go in the opposite direction. So rather than going from genes and proteins to music, might it go from music to genes? And Susumu Ono and Midor Ono used their coding assignment to translate the Chopin Nocturne Opus 55 number 1 into a DNA sequence. So in this way, they're going from music to DNA sequence. And then this sequence that was produced based on Chopin's Nocturne was compared to the large subunit of the mouse DNA polymerase II. And in fact, they found that a particular sequence of 9 nucleotides occurs 4 times in the Nocturne and differs by only 1 nucleotide from the Chopin sequence. So here they're finding similarities between classical music and genetic code. Now, I did a little bit of math and asked myself what the likelihood of 2 sequences of 9 amino acids being the same by chance, and it's actually quite slim. It's about 1 in 250,000, approximately. So I think some might take this as an argument for some innate basis to genetic music. Maybe there's a deeper response such that genetic music can elicit this in us. But I think it's really what we have here is a collection of quirky pieces that are a novel way to engage with genetic information and an artistic break from staring at long strings of letters.
Ho, 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 Vancouver. It's time for the Mint Records, just in time for Christmas party. On December 14th and December 15th, the Mint Records Just in Time for Christmas party will take place at the Railway Club with an unprecedented number of bands performing. Get there early because the first 75 paid entrants each night will receive a gift. Plus, there will be no advance tickets.
Friday to December the 14th features the Pack AD, Bella, Immaculate Machine, Young and Sexy, and the Butler's Champs. Whereas Saturday, December the 15th, you'll be seeing Vancouver, the Choir Practice, the Awkward Stage, Carolyn Mark, and the Ramblin' Ambassadors. And both nights feature CITR's own DJ Bryston spinning tunes in the back lounge.
The Mint Records Just in Time for Christmas Party, Friday, December 14th and Saturday, December 15th at the Railway Club, 579 Dunsmuir Street. First come, first serve.
Opening band Friday is Kellarissa, and on Saturday it's Hot Panda.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday to you.
You're listening to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, and in that first half of the show, you listen to a whole host of tunes derived from DNA sequences, which was certainly an entertaining and quirky romp through sound experiments. And in the remaining bit of the show, we've got a mishmash of news, local events, and Christmas gift ideas, where we might call on you for a few ideas of your own, tempting you with a free pair of tickets to Science World. But before we get to that, I just want to revisit a band that I played a lot of on my last show about a month ago, and that band is the Amygdaloids. They are a rock band from New York City, and their music is inspired by a wide range of classic rockers, but it sets itself apart by including lyrics that focus on the brain, memory, and emotions. Consequently, music from the Amygdaloids has carved out a very new genre, and it also is a term that has become the title of their new album, and that is heavy mental. So the Amygdaloids are Joe Ledoux, who's a neuroscientist, Tyler Voke, and Nina Curley, and Daniela Schiller, all based in New York. And their name actually comes from a part of the brain called the amygdala. The amygdala is generally regarded as a nut-shaped area of the brain that is responsible for emotional behavior. I featured an interview with Joe Ledoux in my last show on the 15th of November, and if you want to hear more about that, you should check out podcasting at citr.ca. But today I just want to keep their music fresh in your mind because it's a fun example of science in the artistic realm. So here for you is Inside of Me from the recent album Heavy Mental by the Amygdaloids.
so I must be. Sometimes I don't know what it is to be me. I see your eyes staring at me. They're sharp as knives. What do they see? You can't see inside of me. That's a place only I can be. My soul has passions, it's trying to feel, searching for desire. Nothing seems real. My will is weak, not very free. Nothing to get hung about, that's just the deal.
You can't see
inside of me.
Inside of me.
That's a place only I can be. You can't see.
You can't see
inside of me.
Inside of me.
That's a place only I can be. So I am.
I think so I am.
I feel so I must be.
So I must be.
Sometimes I don't know.
I don't know
what it is to be me. I think so I am. I feel so I must be. Sometimes I don't know what it is to be me.
So you've just heard Inside of Me by the Amygdaloids off their recent album, Heavy Mental. And you'll hear a little bit more of them later on in the show. But what I want to get to right now is a quick roundup of five great ideas for last minute shopping for the science geek in your life. And while I'm going through these five possible presence. Try and think of your own, because shortly we'll open up the phone line for anyone who might be able to suggest something similar. So, first of all, we'll turn our heads to the brilliant minds behind Inkling Magazine. And as always, they're full of great ideas. And if you check out their online store at inklingmagazine.com/shop, you'll be in the right place to buy such lovely novelty items as plastic food containers with mock radioactive warnings on them. This is clearly a great way to keep your lunch safe in the melting pots that are known as the lab group refrigerators. So I think that was a pretty fun idea. And there's lots of other ideas there at inklingmagazine.com/shop. Number four, for those of you with new babies in your life or babies shortly on the way, check out shop.mumsinscience.net, where you can purchase baby bibs that read, "My mom's a scientist," or "I'm the daughter of a great scientist." And there's lots of other slogans to pick from, and that's at shop.mumsinscience.net. Who knew? I certainly didn't know before today that such a website even existed, but lots of fun stuff there. If there is a true lab rat in your midst, why not make them a lab cow or a lab snow leopard? And you can do that by purchasing an animal print lab coat from thelabrat.com. Seriously, these are quite literally cow and leopard print lab coats. So they look quite hilarious. They'll really guaranteed to create a splash in the lab. Lab cows and lab snow leopards. Interesting choice of animals. Anyway, number two. How about this one? A t-shirt that detects Wi-Fi signal. No need to open your laptop. Just look down at your own shirt as it dynamically reveals current Wi-Fi signal strength. Batteries are not included and runs on a few AAA batteries, and you can find that through thinkgeek.com, among other places. Quite hilarious. Be your own Wi-Fi signal detector. And finally, number one, if you're anyone over the age of, say, about 20, you probably have a secret stash of old mixtapes and other cassettes worthy of hoarding. Oh, and they're so worthy of hoarding. But maybe even your good old Sony Walkman has bit the dust, and maybe it's time to invest about $150 in an Ion USB cassette deck. It's compatible with Macs and PCs, and this little number will let you quickly transfer music from cassettes to MP3 files. Pure genius. That's the Ion USB cassette deck for transferring cassette tapes to MP3 files. Very fun. Very great for the science geek in your life. So that's a roundup of my top five ideas. And what I want to do right now is solicit ideas from you, the listeners. So if you are sitting there by a telephone with the greatest idea of a gift for a science geek in your life or the lives of others, during the next tune, which is about to come up, you should call us here. And in return for your efforts and brilliant ideas, you will be rewarded with a pair of tickets to the Science World Omnimax double feature, which makes a great fun night out for yourself or perhaps a stocking stuffer for a friend. So what you need to do is call us here at 604-UBC-CITR, that's 604-822-2487, with your science gift ideas. And I'll play a little bit more from the Amygdaloids. This is Mind-Body Problem.
Got a mind-body problem. I don't know what to do. I've got a problem. I don't know what to do. My body wants you so. My mind says no. You said you'd always love me. To me you'd be true. You said you'd love me. To me you'd be true. Oh, since you're gone, I'm down in blue. Oh, now you're back, you want me again. Now you're back, you want me again. If I relent, I lose in the end. I got a mind-body problem. got a problem.
He's got a problem.
Don't know what to do.
He don't know what to do.
Body wants you so. My mind says no. Tried religion to get over you. I even tried religion to get over you. But holy dualism couldn't solve my schism. You got me trembling and a shaking. I'm craving you.
He don't know what to do.
I'm trembling and shaking.
He's got a problem.
I'm craving you.
He don't know what to do.
I'm in pain. I'm going insane. My mind says no.
Hi, this is Mick from Bell Sebastian, and you're listening to DITR 101.9 FM.
You're also listening to My Science Project on CITR, and you just heard the Amygdaloids Mind-Body Problem, speaking of one. And you were just asked for your ideas for Christmas gifts for the science geek in your life, and you failed. You are flawed. You have failed, listeners, oh, listeners of mine. And it's just not good, because there's going to be a lot of unhappy science geeks in the world without your ideas. But granted, maybe it'll take you a little bit longer to get your ideas together and get them submitted to us here at My Science Project. So you do have another opportunity. You can jot it down and email us later at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca, and you will be rewarded. Oh, yes, you will. You will be rewarded with a night out at Science World, a couple of tickets coming your way. So once again, email us with an idea for a great gift for the science geek in your life at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca, and you shall be rewarded for your efforts. Yes, you will. So one more time, myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. Send us your great ideas of gifts for science geeks. And while we're still on the Christmas theme, I'm going to let you know about this really hilarious and really fun idea, which is a competition if you're in the Christmas baking spirit. And all you have to do is check out bakeforachange.com. And this is a competition that's being run by Terry. And Terry is a UBC initiative that strives to make connections between the sciences and the humanities. And their efforts are directed more specifically towards the undergraduate community, where they focus on interdisciplinary approaches to current global issues such as climate change, HIV, AIDS, GMOs, and so on. So they do this by way of seminars and guest lectures and interdisciplinary course design most often. But right now, in this festive season, they're doing it in the form of a gingerbread competition. So Terry is launching a design competition that combines eco and spice and everything nice. And the challenge basically boils down to this: apply sustainable building design practices to a gingerbread house. So it's up to you whether you emphasize using rainwater for a toilet or whether you install candy glass skylights or so on. But there are a few ground rules, and these are the rules. One, everything must be edible. Two, however half-baked, hearty har, there must be at least four identifiable sustainable building design elements in your gingerbread house. And three, your design must include a minimum of a floor, a door, four walls, a roof, and two windows. So those are all the rules. It has to be edible, has to have four identifiable sustainable building elements, and it has to have a floor, a door, four walls, a roof, and two windows at minimum. Then what you must do by December 31st is upload your pictures to their Flickr site or email photos to bakeforachange@gmail.com. You can get a lot more information at bakeforachange.com. And I think this is a hilarious way to build your house this year. Why not think while building a house a little bit about sustainable design elements? So that's being run by Terry at bakeforachange.com. Check it out. It's going to be quite hilarious to see the products. And almost as fun to eat them, I'm sure. Moving on, we've got a couple neat little news bits to leave you with before the end of the show. So the first one, really, when I read the headline, I just had to read more because it was just not something I would have worried about on my own. And I was intrigued to see why others were worried. And here's the headline: Why Pregnant Women Don't Fall Over. I'd never really worried about that or considered that, but there is a good scientific and physiological scoop behind that. So during pregnancy, in us two-legged folk, the growing fetus sticks out in front, and that shifts the center of mass forward of the hip. This would create a tendency to tip over. In contrast, four-legged mammals have it easy because the mass remains pretty much squarely between the front and hind limbs and doesn't really cause so much of, as a tip-over issue as maybe a mobility move-around issue. So there's a true problem with us bipedal folks, and this problem needs to be accommodated or there would be a lot of pregnant women crawling around, which is quite a hilarious concept to consider. Nevertheless, Catherine Whitcomb of the University of Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the States, took this quite seriously, and she did it by studying 19 women as they progressed through their pregnancy. They found that women corrected for their imbalance by bending backwards in the lower part of their spine. And after closer investigation, Whitcomb demonstrated that the spines of men and women are very different, likely to accommodate this need. So anatomically speaking, the vertebrae in the lower back are more wedge-shaped in women than they are in men, making this bending backwards of the lower back much easier. Additionally, the interlocking bony projections that align each vertebra with its neighbors are also relatively larger in women, and this is something that would provide added support and prevent sideways slipping of the vertebrae when it's slightly bending to accommodate a shift in center of balance. And interestingly, this gender difference has been identified as far back as 2 to 3 million years in the spines of Australopithecus africanus. So this is quite a long-standing solution to a pretty common problem of us upright, two-legged, reproducing fools. The final couple of ideas that I have for you are two UBC ideas. And these are ideas that made it to the top 70 most intriguing ideas of 2007, as judged by the New York Times. So it's very cool that two ideas from UBC made the cut, as only a few other institutions, such as Harvard, MIT, UCLA, got more than one mention in the New York Times. So idea number one, this is an idea that's coming to be known as, quote-unquote, the God effect. And it comes from the work of assistant prof Ara Norenzayan. Apologies for, no doubt, poor pronunciation. And also the grad student Azim Sharif. And they hypothesize that people act with greater altruism and generosity when they are reminded of God or their civic responsibility. To test this hypothesis, a well-known psychological technique called priming was used to introduce unconscious thoughts to the participants. So one group of participants unscrambled sentences that contained words like God, spirit, sacred, or divine. And the control group unscrambled sentences with no religious references whatsoever. Then, each participant received 10 $1 coins, and they were allowed to either keep or share those $1 coins with an anonymous recipient. The researchers were actually really surprised to observe that the religious primed group gave much more than $5 to these anonymous strangers, so more than 50% of what they'd actually been given. In fact, 68% of the primed group and only 22% of the control group gave more than $5 away. This trend was also upheld when the religious priming was shifted with civic responsibility priming. And in the case of testing civic responsibility notions, they used words such as jury, court, police, and contract in the experimental group. So they're finding here that priming with notions of altruism and good neighbormanship actually contributed to increased generosity. So that's idea number one, and that's the idea that's becoming known as the God effect. And the second idea is one that just might appeal, because if you're looking for a reason to start your holiday early, this is it. So consider this new conclusion. Quitting may be good for you. So maybe grad students should turn the volume down now, but here's the story. Next time you're rallied with pep talks about the benefits of perseverance and toughing it out, you can counter with this anecdote from the labs of UBC. Psychologists Greg Miller and Karsten Roche asked, when does perseverance start to look more like beating your head against the wall? And to find out, they developed a psychological instrument that can reliably distinguish between people who, when faced with a difficult goal, either persist or let it go. Then, in a series of experiments, the psychologists studied these two personality types. In fact, they studied this in teenagers over a full year, and they found that individuals who did not persist had lower levels of a protein called CRP. And CRP is an indicator of bodily inflammation. By extension, those who did persist and those who had great perseverance in achieving goals, and even goals that might not necessarily be achievable, they found much higher levels of this inflammation protein called CRP. So with such a strong link already known between inflammation and diseases such as diabetes and heart disease, this suggests that it might be detrimental to be determined. The authors suggest that when people are faced with situations in which they cannot realize a key life goal, the most adaptive response for physical and mental health may be to disengage and move on. In other words, it might be healthier just to quit and call it a day. So I'm going to call it a day. You should too. Pack it in. Do your body a favor. I'm going to leave you here with another tune by Stepper. Thanks for listening to My Science Project. We'll talk to you in the new year. Here is Ring Loud.
Do you cry? How do you bleed? Thinking that you need a doctor when the cut's barely skin deep. Stuck in a queue, 'cause you cannot cheat. Now you're trying to break records without moving your feet. Well, it seems they've got you waiting for another chance to compete. We're speaking with the same voice. But no choice. We're coming out the mains. But to hear us is a strain. Listen with the same ears. It doesn't always come clear. Though it's ringing,
ringing,
and it's so loud.
Loud.
Now we're singing,
singing
to the same crowd.
Train
don't wait,
cause it's always full, though this track is just one station. The people push and pull, they line the streets, in chains they move just like a chorus of dancers. They're trying to dig this groove. If I could have just one request, it's for a little more room to move. We're speaking with the same voice. There is a plan, but no choice.